So before then, there was not really any direct sort of support. Most support of communist parties in Southeast Asia were more rhetorical and then sort of level, right? Propaganda level, but not necessarily in terms of direct military or logistical support. But during the Cultural Revolution period, essentially, the Chinese state started direct arming the communist movements in Southeast Asia. So in Burma's case, you have a Communist Party of Burma, and in Thailand's case, you have a Communist Party of Thailand, and they started insurgencies. One is from 1966, and the other one is from 1965. So this basically led to direct sort of armed, you know, insurgencies by the communist parties in these two countries. So this basically, in a way that you had the more successful case of the Communist Party of Burma that essentially had a very large sort of sections of territory that they considered as a liberated area and under control, direct control of the CPV until 1989. That's when the global communist movement collapsed, and that's also the CPP collapsed. But the problem of the CPP collapsed in a way that it did not really lead to consolidation by the central state. Rather than it actually lead to a proliferation of many ethnic arms groups that were legacy groups of the CPP, right? In the Thai case as well, the Communist Party of Thailand ran a insurgency sporadically as well in the northern and northeastern mountainous areas, but it was not as successful, I would say, with in comparison with the CPP, in a sense, in a way, because the Thai state was more capable, but also the U.S. Was helping Thailand to develop lots of counter-insurgency programs, right? Particularly for border patrol police, in terms of to establish schools in mountain areas and teach everybody to study Thai, right? So the Thai nation-building process also came out during this period in a way that the most of the schools established by the BPP border patrol police in the 1960s were all Thai schools. They want to teach all those minorities speaking Thai. So that basically, and also by handing out ID cards to those people, make them Thai citizens, right? So it's, in some ways, the Thai state benefited from this sort of American-aided kind of counter-insurgency nation-building nation-building process from this period. And it was nation building was created pretty much on the royalty kind of image, right? So the king was presented as the gracious majesty, and then and then him and his mother was heavily sort of like promoted in the mountain areas in image of those lots of like, I don't know what you've come across. Thailand has highland development programs, right? So in a way, they develop textiles, artifacts, etc. They were all under the name of royal project, right? So that was essentially the Thai state effort to counter the communist movement in at the time. And in some ways, the Cultural Revolution in China itself also helped the Chinese state to consolidate its border region more on a cultural sense. So the argument was that I made in the book is that during the Cultural Revolution period, lots of urban youth from coastal provinces were sent down to the borderland region, and then Yunnan's borderland received a very large number of urban youth from Beijing, from Shanghai, from Sichuan, other major places. So those youth, when they went to the borderland, right, they do labor, right? So basically they are agencies of a state to create economic development or not. But they were also in some ways agents of civilization or signification, right? It was these people that brought like direct sort of Han Chinese cultural imprint into the borderland region, and so that basically, you know, lots of the Cultural Revolution period, you have the start of the lots of the state, let's say, construction corps, and they set up like rubber plantation, sort of modern agricultural development, the clear out forest. So in some way, it's a way of state territorialize its control of the border and consolidate its cultural imprint in the border as well. So that's basically the pretty much the Cold War period, in a way that I looked at these two main major episodes, you know, the Civil War, Chinese Civil War implications, as well as the cultural, the communist revolutions, and that occurred during the Civil War period, during the Cold War period, and then led to different outcomes for the Chinese state, for Thai state, as well for the Burmese state. And in the post-Cold War period, obviously, relationship between these countries became much more friendly, right? You don't really have open confrontations anymore. But somehow, the economic gap between Myanmar and its two neighbors became much more dramatic, in a way that if you look at some of the statistics of economic development across the border, and essentially that the Chinese state, China and Thailand and Myanmar's in terms of the gap of economic development is quite large, right? So that basically means that these days, you know, this is a sort of satellite image of the borderland region, and you can see that on the Chinese side as well as the Thai side is much brighter, much more brighter, in a way that the more economic activities in these two places than Shan State. Shan is very dark overall, right? So that essentially means that when you have a asymmetrical relationship, but overall relations that tend to be much more friendly these days, but still the projection of economic inference from these two neighboring states are going to be much, is going to be there, right? In a way that on the one hand, they will sort of suck out lots of the migrants from Myanmar, right? So you have about 1.5 million of migrant labor coming from Myanmar to go to work in Thailand, right? And much less number of people go to China, but it's actually nowadays, I would say the number of going to China is on the rise. And partly because of different sort of labor management regimes in Thailand versus for the Chinese one, but I would say these days lots of Myanmar labor to China tend to be much more short term, but they do cross border very frequently to do different type of work. So in some ways, that the more powerful neighbor tend to attract centripetal kind of force into pouring out the things out from the poorer states. And on the other hand, it was more a projection of the powerful state into Myanmar's borderland region in terms of exploitation of Myanmar's natural resources, right? In terms of logging, in terms of jade, minerals, and as well as agricultural business. And these days, Thai companies as well as Chinese companies are the ones most active in terms of open up lots of maize plantation, rubber, palm oil, all those basically mostly coming from these two neighboring states. And so this is some of the exploitation of natural resources in Myanmar. And people tend to focus on China, right? The oil pipelines and gas pipelines connecting Myanmar's Bay of Bengal and into Yunnan. But you can see Thailand also has its own pipelines in Myanmar, right? So that's the Andaman Sea, that Thailand similarly has pipelines in operation for quite a long time. And similarly, much of the borderland between the two countries were pretty much open up for agricultural investment. Lots of particularly in southern Myanmar, lots of palm oil. And then in northern part of Myanmar, lots of rubber, banana, and maize, sugarcane, those kind of things. Basically, pretty much all the capital mostly were coming from not Chinese state or Thai state per se, but there are businesses and private entities who come in to invest in those places. So in some ways, that means that even though technically it's still part of Myanmar, but then the inference, or how should I say, the presence of the Chinese economy or the Thai economy is much bigger than the map will tell you, right? So, for example, along the Chinese border region, you have lots of places use Chinese currency instead of the Myanmar jia, right? And similarly, Thai baht was also, in circulation in parts of the Shan state, pretty much, if you can use that all the way up until Jiangdong, Basically, you can use Thai baht equivalent with Myanmar jia. Right, so some similar in Myawadi as well, in a way that method that you have lots of Thai economic projection of its influence on Myanmar. So that basically is so that was the some of the contributions that I talk about, in a way that when we think about the nation building, the success and the failure of a state consolidation, in this particular case, the reason why Myanmar couldn't really consolidate its borderland region between China and Myanmar is because the China Myanmar Thailand was too powerful, in a way that actually both of them had a negative effect on Myanmar itself. So I did talk a little bit. I didn't really talk much in the book, but if you look at comparison with the other side of Myanmar's border, with Bangladesh, with India, you find that in some ways the Indian state had equally bad job of consolidating that region, and so border was actually not much of an issue in that regard. In a way that basically the Indian state had insurgents of itself, and Myanmar state had its insurgents itself. So basically, the borderland was not politicized as much as in this side of the border, when the Thai state and then the Chinese state was much more present in terms of projection themselves into Myanmar itself. So that's basically some of the theoretical contribution, essentially. You should not look at domestic factors alone, right? The reason why Myanmar couldn't really consolidate, obviously domestic politics matter, right? You can blame everything on the Myanmar military, but in some ways, it's not necessarily the military's fault, in a way that, you know, even if you have democracy, whatever, still might not happen because the two neighboring states were powerful enough to sabotage it. So that's basically the argument itself. All right, thank you. Yes?
I was surprised you didn't talk much about ethnicity.
Right.
And I'm curious, my assumption would be that the border regions have a different ethnicity than the central,
yes,
central government, and that there's probably an overlap of the border, of the same ethnicity on both sides of the border, and I'm curious to know whether that plays a role.
Yes. So this is, I did cover that in one of the chapters on nation building. In some ways, you have basically pretty much, you're right, in a way that lots of minorities living in the area. But those minorities live in China as well, and they also live in Thailand as well, to much less extent, right? But the difference is basically in the sense that the Chinese state nation building, as well as the Thai state nation building, was also more successful than the Burmese one, right? So, you know, the argument was more of that as a comparative well-being kind of argument, in a sense that, you know, you have lots of minorities that cross the border between China and Myanmar, and but then the ones in China tend to buy into the Chinese nation national project than the Burmese one, right? So that is basically in some ways indications of the nation building itself is extension of the state building itself, right? In a way that if you can effectively build your school system, and then people can be educated into learning the national language, right? So during the Cold War period, for example, Thai state spent a lot of time on educating people in the north to speak Thai, central Thai, right? And then that's how you became a Thai, right? But Myanmar state couldn't really do so, right? So in a way that its school system to be posted into the border regions came out in the post-89 period. Even then, it's much limited in terms of its presence and scale. Yeah.
Just one follow-up on that.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, I mean, in a lot of places, there's a kind of turmoil as a result of the fact that you have kind of disaffected ethnic groups on the border, and
right,
the central state uses that as an excuse to send troops to,
yeah,
stabilize the border, but in fact that ends up as an incursion into the other state.
Yes.
Is there any of that going on?
So in this case was more on, so neither the Chinese state nor the Thai state directly used military force in this period, right? But the Myanmar state did try to let's say eliminate those rebels, but they couldn't do so, right? They still, until today, they were still fighting, right? And I don't know exactly why they couldn't do so, right? I think probably because the terrain was too difficult, right? And then probably the military itself was not sophisticated enough in terms of its ability to counter. But I think in the end, there are lots of, how should I say, co-inhabitants between between the central military and different rebel groups. So that's some of the people argue that these days some of the Myanmar state tend to use lots of militias and as agents to pacify the region, but that still doesn't really mean the state can manage a coherent sort of project. Rather, it's for more piecemeal kind of a partnership, kind of with different people, and then try to progressively have its presence. But in return, obviously, is many of the bad things, like drug trafficking, and then other things that basically as the outcome of the state didn't really have enough control of the region. Yeah. Yes.
Jose Collazo just recently returned from Southeast Asia. I appreciate. I'm going to buy your book. I really.
Oh, thank you.
But I was wondering, how could you use your analysis to maybe explain a situation? I was just in Cambodia, a country that has border disputes with all its neighbors.
Right.
You know, and is an issue that's used to basically indict the Hun Sen administration. But it has disputes with Thailand, disputes with Laos, disputes with Vietnam, and most people look at the map and say, "Oh, there's Cambodia," but in reality, that border is, in some places, doesn't exist. So
right.
How can you use this analysis moving forward to maybe to shed light on that situation?
Yeah,
you have these three neighbors that are just,
I think there are some similarities, I would say, like in a way that in the Cambodian case, Cambodia was also in some ways the butter case. So you have at least two powerful neighbors. Laos probably not that present, but mostly the Vietnamese state and the Thai state were historically, also during the Cold War period, much more interventionist in Cambodia itself, right? So so Vietnam still had more, even though Vietnam was, both Vietnam and Thailand were resented the other for Cambodia, its nationalist image itself, right? So during Cold War, you had the Vietnamese occupy Cambodia, and then even today has much more influence on the borderland of economically on Cambodia itself. Similarly with Thailand, Thailand supported rebels during the Khmer Rouge period, right? They hosted the Khmer Rouge in Thailand itself to fight against the Vietnamese-supported government at the time. So even today, I would say the border, most of the disputes with Thailand, right, some of the militarized conflicts, has been relatively peacefully settled overall, right? But the projections of Thai economy into Cambodia itself still remains, right? So you have large number of Cambodians now go work in Thailand, right? So you have this kind of like a similar kind of effect of sucking out the labor force from the borderland provinces into working in Thailand itself. So you do see sort of similar patterns of this kind of asymmetrical relations of Thailand versus its two neighboring states. And I would say Thailand's influence in Myanmar and as well as in Cambodia are, economically speaking at least, Thailand benefit tremendously from the cheap labor coming from these two countries to work in its sort of like 3D low-end labor sectors. Yeah.
Just one comment. I mean, I'm sure everybody has heard about the Prayavihear temple.
That temple, yes.
But there's another one coming up between Thailand and Cambodia, and that's the overlapping plains in the Gulf of Thailand.
Because there's
a huge plot of
natural gas, yeah.
And this is why I bring this up, because they will soon, if Thailand ever comes around, they will soon negotiate that border again. And we all blame it on the French. So. Everybody blames it on the French there.
Thai state actually is in some ways, very imperial in itself, in its relation with its two neighbors. Not so much with Malaysia, but at least with Cambodia and Myanmar. They were, Thai businesses were very actively involved in those countries. Media don't focus on them, right? But Thai state, for example, many of the dams in Laos and Cambodia, they're all Thais. Yeah, Thai build lots of those kind of things, yeah. Yes.
Hi, I'm Judy. I'm a grad student at GW. I know you alluded to the military, but I wonder if you can talk more about China and Thailand's roles in the current crisis in Myanmar and how they could contribute to the peace process in the long term.
Okay. So the role played by China and Thailand in Myanmar's internal ethnic conflict, yeah? Thailand supported KNU during the Cold War, right? So Thailand used KNU as its buffer. So KNU was the one like on the current state, you know, sort of that province, right? That's basically where Thailand tried to use the KNU during the time as the buffer against the Myanmar government. But since then, I think from Thaksin Shinawat period onwards, basically start to use solved all the problems, right? Basically got rid of the idea that use Myanmar as buffer anymore, and they want to use more economic means, right? You know, I forgot which prime minister basically said that they want to make Cold War battlefield into marketplace, right? So today, I don't think, I will not say it openly, but I think Thai state do not openly support military activities of armed groups, but this is obviously anecdotal stories, but someone told me that the Shan State Army South is trained by the Thai military. I don't know. Someone said it's the case that basically they tend to use very sophisticated weapon systems from Thailand. That's what they say, but I don't know. I don't have evidence. Same with Chinese case, in a way that during Cold War period, obviously, China provided direct military and personnel support for the CPB. And even today, you have more close relationship with, let's say, the WAS state, and as well probably to less extent the KIA. But I would not say that this direct military support, but rather it's other type of sort of economic relations with them. And in terms of direct, how they can help into the peace negotiation, right? Thailand does not play an active role, even though all the rebel groups from Myanmar have office in Chiang Mai. So to tell you something, basically almost all the rebel groups will have office in Chiang Mai, right? So that means that there are much, I'm sure Thai state is involved with some element of that. But then obviously openly, it's a Chinese state where more active in terms of trying to facilitate those peace negotiation conversations, right? And reasonably so, because China does have more influence in Hua state, at least, you know, in Hua. Like Hua historically was much more culturally and politically more oriented towards China. So that's why they facilitated the rounds of negotiations and etc. But I think this is not something that can be solved with China or Thailand support. Right. In some ways, it was internal, right? Internal to Myanmar itself, that the state, how should I say? Like they couldn't. On the one hand, there's lots of like mutual, animosity or whatever. But on the other hand, is indication of the incompetence of Myanmar military itself, right? So in the literature on civil war studies, right, many countries who actually had a peace is because the central state defeated the rebel opposition fundamentally, right? Like Sri Lanka's case, basically the rebel were eliminated, and that's why you can sort of successfully build peace from that onwards. But Myanmar state somehow just cannot do that, doesn't really have the capability. So that's why my analysis is that this conflict is going to go on. Nobody knows where it will end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you break down the Chinese state a little bit? Because right. I think that, in fact, there are different groups. There's the Beijing government, there's Kunming government, there's the PLA,
right.
There are business people. So how do you see all of these various Chinese actors kind of pursuing their own agendas in Myanmar, and to what extent are those in harmony with each other, and to what extent are those in confrontation, particularly in regard to the borderland area?